Welcome back. Our guest this week is Robert McCann of the K-12 Alliance of Michigan, pushing the Republican legislature to spend COVID aid from the federal government. And that's our lead story. There's a stalemate on pushing that aid. On the OTR panel, Eric Lloyd, Emily Lawler, and Chad Livingood. Sit in with us as we get the inside out, Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much for joining us and taking time out of your busy schedule to sit in with us as we welcome our panelists this morning. We have Eric and Chad and Emily who are going to join us magically. Good morning, everybody. How are we all doing?
Good morning. Good.
Yeah. We're holding up, Tim.
Apparently, you guys haven't had your coffee yet, all right? Let's talk about the lead story in our town this week, which continues to be the governor singing the same song and getting no reply from the legislature on let's work together on that $5 billion in federal COVID aid.
The governor introduced her COVID recovery package some 22 days ago, aimed at spending $5 billion in federal aid to get kids safely back into school, to get more shots into arms, and to get badly needed financial help to small businesses that are suffering. But for 3 weeks, the governor has repeated this same line over and over again.
Right now, we're leaving that $5 billion just sitting on the table. I look forward to working with the Republicans in the legislature to get this done.
But despite her pleas, still no deal.
As a physician, I share the frustration of many of my colleagues who feel some politicians are wasting too much time, ignoring too many facts, and frankly, playing political games when patients' lives are at stake.
The good news on the COVID front is there's been an 85% drop in the number of cases. Fewer test results are coming back positive, a five-week trend, and there's been a 79% drop in COVID cases in hospital beds. However, the state is reporting 157 new variant cases in 12 counties around the state, including a 90-case outbreak in the Ionia State Prison. Meanwhile, 14% of the state's population has received at least one shot and
514,000 people are fully vaccinated, over 500,000 people, meaning they have received both doses of the vaccine. Over 35% of people over the age of 75 in the state have had at least one dose of the vaccine. This means we are well on our way to our goal of vaccinating 70% of Michiganders aged 16 and up as quickly as possible.
All right, Eric, the allegation was made in that piece from The Good Doctor that somebody is playing politics. Can you explain to me what the politics are being played, if they are being played?
Well, yeah, the big fight that's going on in Lansing is not as much where the money's going to go, but how it's going to be spent and when. The Republicans want to hold back a good chunk of it to make sure that it is actually needed when it is put out. But the governor is saying she wants all money to be put out as fast as possible, as soon as possible, so we can get more people vaccinated, more people help. And she says that when we do have that money that is spent, it sends a message to the White House that we are using the money they sent us so that we will get more aid and more vaccines and stay at the top of that queue. Republicans say things are going well right now. They're getting the money out there. So it's just a matter of we'll put this money out and then we'll see what else needs to be allocated after that, because things change on a weekly basis during this whole COVID crisis.
Emily, the allegation is that the Republicans are trying to make the governor look bad as a setup as we move into next year, which is an election year for her and them. Any validity to that?
Well, Republicans have been trying to insert themselves more front and center, or really at all, in sort of the policy around how the state is responding to the coronavirus crisis. Obviously, the purse strings is a place that they have a lot of inherent power. And I think they've felt powerless in a lot of ways in regards to the epidemiology orders coming out of first the governor's office and then DHHS. But for them, this is a politically opportune, I think, time to try to assert themselves. I mean, we are not dealing with the sort of threat that hospitals would be overrun by the viral load right now. The cases are not skyrocketing like they were this fall, or of course, you know, a year ago almost, when we knew far less about this disease. You know, I think that Republicans are looking at this as a place where they can take a little bit of time and try to get some input in the process.
Governor, excuse me, Chad, it was pointed out in that piece that the governor has been on the same message of let's work together for quite a time with nothing to show for it. Why not?
Well, a lot of it has to do with what's going on across the street, Tim. I mean, you got a Senate majority leader who is sort of stepping in it on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis with all of his incendiary comments, including making comments about you know, wishing violence on the governor. And so there's part of the administration is like, we're not going to negotiate with this guy. And there's other part of the administration, I think the three people to watch right now in this town are the appropriations chairs and Dave Mazron, the state budget director. And those three men can get in the room and talk this out, they might be able to make a deal, because the governor and Mike Shirky are not going to make a deal. And we really still don't know how Speaker Jason Wentworth is going to kind of play in these talks, in this relationship. The last term was kind of in that trio was sort of defined at times by Lee Chatfield trying to be the deal maker. And always get those two folks in the same room, and we haven't really seen whether Jason Wentworth has that skill set yet.
There is an opportunity, I think, for the new speaker to be, some people say, to be the adult in the room. He could be the X factor that breaks this thing loose. We have seen him this past week or so be very clear that he's not going to be Lee Chatfield. Mr. Chatfield was strongly criticized, people below the radar, about having a cloistered group around him and his white chalkboard that nobody else could see except his select group. Mr. Wentworth is delegating a lot more, also putting some distance between himself and his colleague in the state Senate, who clearly remains in trouble. And so I think he could emerge as the key factor here. And perhaps, Eric, the governor ought to be inviting him to lunch or something.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big criticisms that we've been hearing from Shirky is they're having these meetings, but they're presentations and not conversations. And it does seem like Wentworth is more open to bringing a different voice to the table, because we've heard what Senator Shirky has to say about each other and what the governor has had to say about them. So it'll be interesting to see if Wentworth can be that difference maker, because he definitely is not Lee Chatfield. That is for sure. He's trying to come at this job, this position, the way he handles it, much differently. And we'll see if the payoff is in these negotiations.
Emily, the governor said that her budget director and there had been some meetings, but no negotiations. What are they waiting for?
Good question. I would say that a lot of the political air in this town has been, frankly, centered around Mike Shirky and the response to his comments recently. You've got groups like the Michigan Democratic Party calling on him to resign. You know, there's not a lot of clarity around how much support he has within his caucus, especially if this is going to continue. So politically, this is a fraught situation. You know, Lansing tends to sort of gravitate toward the big news of the day. The governor made a valiant attempt at making the budget the big news of the next several weeks. And I don't think it succeeded, frankly. I don't think that the budget is taking front and center like it normally would be at this point in the cycle.
Tim,
Chad, normally, go ahead.
Here's the shrewd politics of this. The governor can wait this out. The legislature has to go home and explain why there are evictions in the, happening when there's tens of millions of dollars of aid to stop evictions in residential low-income housing. They got to go back to home and explain to superintendents why they're sitting on $1.5 billion of federal aid for schools that could be injected into schools right now to help with their reopening costs. The legislature is going to start feeling it And we haven't seen really what the effects are of Mike Shirky's, you know, conspiracy theories and misogynistic comments about the governor. But if Senate Republicans start seeing fewer people at their March fundraisers, you will start seeing movement in the legislature on these bills.
Emily, let's talk just briefly. I picked up some soundings last night from a pretty good source that there's some concern, if you will, in the Black Caucus vis-a-vis the alleged lack of diversity in the governor's office and the new House Minority Leader, Ms. Leszczynski's office, and they're contemplating what they should do about that. We're at a point in year three of a gubernatorial tenure where you're kind of readjusting things as you move into next year, which is very important. If this comes to fruition, that they go public and complain about this, what impact does that have? It sort of evens the score with the Republicans are having internal problems. Now here, potentially, the governor could be facing some of her own.
Yeah, that's really surprising to me, only because at the outset, the governor sort of prided herself on assembling what she says is the most diverse cabinet in history. I personally don't have a terribly long history in this town, but she did make it a point, I think, to reach out into some communities that traditionally have been left out of the highest levels of state government. I'm not sure if the complaint you're referring to might be within her office itself. I haven't heard of any complaints there, but perhaps. But I think the governor's always been really conscious about making this an issue and making it sort of a central piece of how she wants to govern, frankly. I mean, I look back to things like her opening up a Detroit office, you know, during her campaign in 2018 and just putting such a big emphasis in that city and gaining some local support there. And I really think that you know, this is an important issue to her. So if it does come up, I think that they will have gotten her attention pretty swiftly.
Chan, do you think that we're looking for more churn in the governor's office, that Mr. Gordon was the tip of the iceberg? Are you picking up those soundings, sir?
Well, it's typical that as you're getting into year three and you're starting to think about the reelection, that there will be people who start leaving to go work on their reelection or the super PAC or whatever form it takes. And then you just have people that are going to burn out. I mean, this is already any normal time, a governor's office positions are burnout jobs, and nobody really ever makes it to be able to make it to year four, much less year eight, if you are reelected. And so, you know, you're naturally going to have people who are, and then the people have been working their tails off for the last year, and some of them haven't even been to the office. They've been just doing it from their house or whatnot. So it's you know, the dynamics are going to change. I mean, the governor has two, George Cook and Tommy Stallworth has two African-American legislative liaisons in the Capitol every day. And she's got a pretty diverse cabinet. And so it's much more diverse than the couple of the past administration for sure. And so, I'm not really sure where all this is coming from yet, but in the legislature, in the House Democratic Caucus, that might be a lot of the case of, you know, just some former legislators who've gotten jobs in some of those positions and some questions about, you know, those hiring priorities. They're all, you know, leaders in the legislature always get questioned about their hiring priorities.
Yeah, I don't want to overblow the story, but it is a concern at this juncture that may mushroom or it may be subsided. We either way, we'll keep an eye on it. Now, let's call in Robert McCann from the Education Lobby. Mr. McCann, you and your colleagues had a news conference earlier this week trying to nudge the legislature along. The question is, did the nudging produce anything or are we still at a stalemate?
Well, I guess time will tell on that. But as of today, we are absolutely still at a stalemate. And, you know, the problem with that is that, you know, every school out there right now is focused on what it's going to take to help students start the recovery process, which is not a short-term type solution that we're looking for. It's a one-year, two-year, three-year plan that these schools need to start planning to implement. And to start that process, they need to have some funding certainty. And when we saw that stimulus plan get passed in Congress back in December, that was good news. It was going to provide some certainty, was going to provide an injection of funds into schools that desperately need them right now. And to see that process get held up for absolutely no reason in the legislature now is, it's not only frustrating to watch, but it's infuriating to see happen at a time where schools can least afford to have politics injected into the process. So, you know, we're absolutely going to keep making noise about this. This money needs to shake loose. And until that happens, it's only our students that are suffering from that.
Are you going to contact all the SUPs around the state and say, you better call your local legislator and lean on them right now? Are you doing that?
Absolutely. This is an all hands on deck effort. There's not a superintendent in Michigan right now that doesn't see the need for this money to shake free immediately, because like I said, they are neck deep in planning, you know, whether they have their students back in person, whether it's a hybrid, whether they're still in the process of getting students back, there is an absolute need for that money to start flowing immediately. Other states have already sent it to their schools, and those districts are getting to work helping their students. We are putting ourselves at a disadvantage by not appropriating that money immediately. So there's no good reason for this to be taking place. And again, regardless of what aisle you're sitting on, we shouldn't consider this acceptable.
Eric.
Bob.
Eric, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Jump in, man.
Oh, well, okay. Sorry, I didn't know if you had a question. I'm wondering, the biggest thing I've been hearing and what Governor Whitmer has been really pushing is learning loss. Say a fourth grader last year in March had her school year cut short and then has been in virtual all fifth grade. How does, obviously more money for schools is always a good thing, it always helps, but how does more money and throwing money at this problem help a student who has been missing out on so much catch up to where they need to be when they get to sixth, seventh, eighth grade?
It helps the process start, and that's the most important step right now. I don't love the term learning loss because it implies that we know exactly where students are at right now, and we don't. We know that there has been a loss of classroom time for every student in Michigan, and that itself has a tremendous impact not only on their academics, but on their social and emotional stability that is ultimately going to help them recover from this pandemic. We need to have tutors getting hired. We need to have upgrades to building safety features if we're bringing students back. We need to be bringing more people into classrooms to help with individual student needs, to even understand exactly where those needs are. Until we start asking those questions and assessing where every student is at in the process, we're not going to know what recovery even looks like yet. So the longer these funds get held up, the longer a budget, you know, even looking beyond this stimulus package, the longer it takes to get a budget deal done for the upcoming school year, the harder it is for schools to get those resources spent and start the process. So it's absolutely at a point right now in which every day the legislature delays getting those funds out, it's going to delay the ability to get those resources put into place to help students, by the same amount of time as the legislature is taking. So again, you know, I understand the tenor of politics right now in Lansing. I understand we're at, you know, a level of partisanship that we've probably never seen before. But we need to put that aside. We need to find a way to say that, you know, we can pick our battles and fight them where we need to. But when it comes to our students, when it comes to their recovery needs right now, we have to put them first. And that's just the reality of it.
Emily.
Bob, what in your mind is the worst case, absolute worst case scenario right now? Is it that these funds never get spent, or can you not really see that happening?
I mean, that is unfortunately a potential here. Those funds have a window in which they must be spent within that the federal government attached to it. It has a 15-month window. And when it comes to spending, you know, one-time funding like this, it's not as simple as saying, you know, as soon as it comes in the door, they can spend it. A lot of the projects that this funding is meant to help pay for are things that take months of planning to even implement. For example, this funding is supposed to help a number of districts put to use for improving their air filtration systems so that, you know, as we're bringing students back, whether it's in the summer or in the fall or even sooner than that, that there's better ability to manage the air filtration system to keep students safer during this pandemic and, of course, any future health emergencies that we're dealing with. That process is one that would require months of preparation, putting it out for a bidding process, you know, finding a qualified person to do the work. It's not something you can implement overnight. And so if districts don't start getting this money soon, projects like that may fall off the table because they simply won't have time to spend the money in the window the federal government's provided. So this is a very real scenario right now that these delays are, you know, not only causing problems in terms of starting the process, but may, if they extend much longer, start creating problems in which districts may not even be able to put this funding to full use, in which case that's money we're just going to send right back to the federal government.
Chad.
Bob, does your coalition favor suspending state exams for this year and even next year? What's your status or stance on that right now?
Yeah, we certainly have supported the efforts of the state superintendent to get waivers from the federal government from having to provide those standardized testing this year. And the reason for that is simply that we know that students have suffered a disruption unlike we've ever seen in their learning process. They've been out of classroom in some capacity or another, you know, for up to a year now. So we don't need a standardized test for several reasons. One, we don't have the time to be focusing on prepping them for a test right now. We need to be focusing our education efforts on identifying the student needs, identifying where they're at in the process, and working with them individually to start catching them back up to where we need to be. And secondly, we don't need a test to confirm that these students are behind where we'd hope they'd be. There's no question that they are. We've said since the beginning of this pandemic that the longer students are out of the classroom, the longer it's going to take to catch some of them back up. That's just the reality of a situation like this. So taking a test is not going to be a accurate representation of, number one, of where students are at right now, but two, it's not going to help in their recovery. So we don't want to spend time focusing our education efforts on a test that isn't going to provide information that's going to be helpful right now. It's just not in our students' best interest.
Mr. McMahon, refresh my memory. How many years did you spend working with Senator Gretchen Whitmer or Representative Whitmer?
I served 4 years with her during her time as the Senate Democratic leader, as communications director and then her chief of staff for her last couple of years.
Have you been approached directly or indirectly about joining the administration?
No, never had that conversation with her. It's not something I was pushing for. I'm certainly a appreciative of the governor, and I'm a supporter of this governor. But I'm happy with the role I am in, Tim.
All right. If you were advising Mr. Shirky on how to deal with this problem with the governor, whom you know, what would your advice be?
I think most importantly is don't think that she is someone you can push around. I think Chad was talking about earlier on the show, this bizarre rhetoric coming from his office, but it's not from his office, it's from him, about physical violence against her and a desire to fist fight her on the Capitol lawn. I don't know what in the world he thinks that's going to accomplish in terms of advancing any kind of an agenda or thinking that she's going to back down to a threat like that. That is a wild miscalculation of both her personally, her leadership style, but also just reality. I mean, that is just not a statement that is acceptable to anybody. So I don't know where his head is at right now. I wouldn't profess to be able to explain some of his comments, but if he thinks that they are going to work with this governor, I think he's just completely miscalculating that.
Are you fearful that this breakdown in the relationship could kill part or all of your $5 billion package? Is it that important, and is it puts it more at risk?
Absolutely. I think all of us in this conversation have been around Lansing long enough to look at this current situation and say, I think with level of confidence, that we've never seen anything like this. I've certainly never seen partisanship in Lansing reach this level of animosity, reach this level of distrust, and just the reality that politics and partisanship seem to just dominate the every bit of energy in and around the Capitol. So there's little space right now to see, you know, even the most fundamental work of the legislature getting done. Literally, they have one job to do in terms of this federal funding that came to Michigan, and it's pass a bill that simply appropriates it. And we can't even get that done without politics being injected into it, without unrelated issues dealing with partisan, you know, power struggles getting injected into that. And that has to stop. Like, I get the fact that politics are always a part of these conversations, but if at the end of the day, we need to make sure that the most fundamental issues of government, and there is a constitutional obligation that every legislator has to supporting public education, to ensuring that schools have the funding they need to operate. And if we're not even able to do that because of partisanship, then we are failing as a government. We are failing as a group of leaders in doing what our state needs done. And if I think we just have to find a way around that.
All right, will you hang around a little bit for an overtime segment?
Of course.
Sure, you have nothing better to do, right? Listen, go to WKAR.org for more of our conversation with Mr. McMahon and our great panel, and take a look at these closed credits before you do, and we'll see you on the other side.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michiganstoptop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.